So today on table 40, we have a special guest, awesome football quarterback, Ben Roethlisberger. Ben, thanks for coming on. Let's jump right into it. So we were just talking before we came on about kind of your growing up, and I'd listened to some other stuff about you and you, your parents. And tell us a little bit about your growing up. And I know you said your parents are Christians, and they raised you in a Christian home. And tell us some of the things about your parents that people would find interesting about just, you know, kind of the way they raised you, and give us some of that background.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me, first of all.
Yes.
Be a part of this. So, you know, I grew up, my parents actually got divorced at a very early age. And so they, I spent time going back and forth between my mom and my dad's house. And so then when I was 8, my mother died in a car accident. And so my dad, by that time, though, was already remarried to who I call my mom now. She's an amazing woman and was an amazing mother to me. And so she was the one that, like, as my dad was working, like, I should probably owe a lot of my athleticism and sports to her, because she was the one outside playing catch, playing basketball, playing bait. I mean, everything we were doing, soccer, was with her. And so, you know, my dad worked, but was still obviously very active at home with us. And they were, we grew up in the church, went to church every single Sunday. I can't ever remember missing church. You know, it just, sports, you better get back on Sundays for church. So, you know, that's kind of how I grew up. And my dad played sports. He went to play quarterback and went to Georgia Tech to play quarterback, blew his knee out like his first year, I think, and then decided to go play baseball, and he pitched at Georgia Tech. And so I kind of got a lot of that, the drive and stuff from him, and wanted to be a quarterback because of him. And so that's kind of how I grew up, was wanting to be like my dad. And that's kind of in all areas of life, from an athlete to a father to a Christian man to a husband, all those things. So he always was and has been and still is my role model, you know?
That's awesome. So I didn't know that about your mom passing away. Did that have an impact at 8 years old? What kind of impact would you say that had on you dealing with such a difficult situation?
Yeah, you know, it's crazy. The crazy thing about the story was she was actually coming to pick me up for the weekend, you know, and I'm outside playing, like, probably basketball with my mom or with my stepmom. I'll say my mom because that's what I'm used to saying now. But I was outside, you know, playing basketball. And then, like, time kind of passed. And then we started playing football. Then we started playing, you know, literally, like, it's like one sport to another. And it's like, where is my mom? And then my dad comes home from work, and he's like, what are you still doing here, kind of thing, you know? And we don't know. So we went inside. We got a call from my real mom's parents and said, hey, your mom was in a car accident, blah, blah, blah. So it was just a really weird situation. You know, I was spending time with the woman who is my mom to this day and has been an amazing mother to me. Like I said, spending time with her while this happened. And I couldn't think of a better person to be with when something like that happened. You know, I think at 8, it's tough because, like, my oldest is 7 right now. And I think, like, how would it, I watch him and all the things that he goes through, how would it affect me at his age, kind of? And I just remember thinking at that time, like, all I could think of was, like, I'm going to see her soon. Like, I had no concept of how long life is, you know, like, but I could think, like, oh, I'm going to see her in heaven soon. Like, it's not no big deal, like, kind of thing. And, you know, that's 30 years ago or whatever it is. And it's like, wow, it's still a long ways to go till you get to heaven, hopefully. But so as a kid, that's all I remembered. I do remember this at the funeral home, my cousin saying to me, you know, it's okay to cry. Cause I think I was trying to be like this tough kid and you're a boy and all this. And I remember kind of crying a little bit there, but those couple of things as 8, you don't remember a lot of things, but I do remember those kind of two vivid things from that time, is saying, I'm going to see her again at some point soon. And then being, it's okay to cry for it.
That's tough.
Yeah.
So another thing that totally different, another thing that may have been difficult for you, and we talked about this a little bit before we jumped on here, is you didn't play quarterback at all until you were a senior in high school. And so kind of explained how in the world that happened.
Right.
in your journey?
I mean, the crazy thing is people always ask me about my kids, you know, like what, you know, are you letting your kids, like, isn't the $1 million question when you ask a football player, are you gonna let your kids play football? And I didn't play football till the fifth grade. The first time I stepped on a football field was fifth grade. And nowadays that's like unheard of. People are playing flag football, even tackle football at a young age. So I didn't play till the fifth grade. That's when I first started. And I always kind of had an ability to throw a ball. Like, I think it's literally what God gave me. It's my oldest son. I tell him the same thing. Like, his form is not really there, whether it's a baseball, football. He doesn't have to step and throw. Like, you teach him to step and throw. He can just throw a ball a long way and throw it really accurate. And I'm like, you have a God-given ability, son. And I think that's what I had. Like, I remember playing at recess, you know, like before fifth grade, like I was always the quarterback, you know, and just something cool about being the quarterback, cause I could throw the ball a long way too. So anyway, I'm saying that like the fifth grade was kind of first time I got going. And then, you know, as my high school career, you know, played middle school football, wasn't anything special. And then I got to high school, and I remember my freshman year of high school, I played freshman football. And all my class growing up, like everyone, you know, like middle school, there were three middle schools in my high school and they all go to one high school. So everyone knew that like our class was really special because all three schools were really talented. And everyone kept talking about, oh, when this class gets there, when this class gets up. So anyway, my freshman year, almost all of us stayed and played freshman ball together. And we went 2-2 the first four games. And the only time I got in the game was to hold extra points. And like, literally, that's the only time I got in the game as a freshman football player. And then we had this kid that played quarterback that was a really good athlete. And so we were just, like I said, we were 2-2 and I didn't get in the game. And then the coach was like, you know, we should put Ben at quarterback and put the kid that was a quarterback at wide receiver. And we ended up going like 6-0 the rest of the season. So then we then go like your sophomore year. It was like, okay, some kids were playing varsity, but most of us stayed on JV. We played JV, and I played JV. And we had a coach who ended up being my quarterback coach in high school. He's a really good dude. I still talk to him to this day. Basically, we were drawing up plays in the dirt. Like, he's like, okay, go, like, doing all this stuff. And we went, you know, we went like 10-0 JV. I played quarterback the whole time, and we were scoring like 50 points. Like, it was basically, I felt like it was the coach's like real life Madden before Madden was popular.
Yeah. You know?
He got to go like
play. So fun.
he had a toy and he was just playing with his toy.
Like, exactly.
We were amazing.
We were so good and we were blowing teams out and it was crazy. So then my junior year, the coach's son was a year ahead of me, the head coach's son, always obviously through all this part. And he's a really good he's a good athlete. And he was good. I mean, I could see, but you know, there was some, I don't call it controversy because that seems silly.
I was going to ask you, what'd your dad play football? Your dad knows football. What was your dad saying through this? Cause I can imagine my dad would have been like, you know,
yeah. Not too happy. My dad was the dad that during games sat on like the visitor side up in the upper corner, you know? Like, never was a part of the yet. Like he was always on the other side. So he would just kind of sit there and I'd have to try and find him at some point during the games, you know? And I'm lucky in that way that my parents were not those kind of crazy parents, you know, that we all see that are just all over the place. So I don't remember. I think he probably would always just tell me like, hey, you know, do what you can for the team and this and that, because so that's what happened. Like my junior year, I just wanted to play. Like I didn't care where. So I told coach, I said, hey, I'll play anywhere you want me to play. I just want to be on the football field. So he's like, well, the only thing that makes sense for you would be like play wide receiver. Cause I was, at that point, I think I was like 6'2", like 150 pounds. You know, I was skinny. And it didn't make sense. So he's like, all right, we'll put you wide receiver. And I was by no means special, but I did good enough that like I was like all state wide receiver, literally just by catching like some high balls and stuff. So, but I just wanted to be on the field. And so that's what I would encourage anybody that's out there listening, high school kids or if you're a parent, would like, help out however you can. Like, that's literally what I did. I said, I just want to be on the field. Like, I'm not going to go pout because I can't play quarterback. I want to play quarterback, but I can't. So I'm not going to go pout. I'm going to go do what I can to help the team. And I think I've taken that mentality from college to the pros, where literally it's like, I'll do whatever it takes to win. And I think that's lost in a lot of people today, because it's all about what can I do? How can I get my numbers, get my stats, get my paycheck. And And I get, especially when you get to the majors and stuff, that you have to, you have to support your family, so you have to get a check. But at the end of the day, the team should always be the most important thing. And so that's, I think that was instilled in me early. And so that's, man, I'd say that's maybe what my dad taught me, was that it needs to be about the team. And so that's what I did. I just focused on trying to help the team. And I think my junior year, I think I threw 4 passes, and like at wide receiver, you know, like reverse passes, and they all were like touchdowns or something. Like there's some kind of crazy like thing out there, but
that trick play.
Yeah, the trick play, exactly. So that was my junior year. And then finally the coach, he was a year older than me, he graduated.
But you finally got your time to shine.
Finally got my chance. And that year I set all kinds of state records, you know, through 54 touchdowns. Like just, we just went berserk and went to the playoffs for the first time in school history type thing. And the ironic thing was, he was a quarterback in high school that went to play wide receiver in college.
He should have flipped them.
So, but it was, it ended up working out just fine, you know? So I encourage people that if it's not going well for you, you know, stay with it, find a way. Things will happen for a reason.
And you probably didn't lose your desire to play quarterback, and you probably continued to work on that craft. Is that a fair assumption?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, it wasn't like I went and pouted and was like, oh, I guess I need to go try and do, you know, something else. Like, I kept throwing. I kept doing things. I knew what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And so I never gave up on that dream.
Yeah, and I think that's important for young kids to hear, because the reality is there are going to be those times in our lives when – things don't work out, just like you said, but to keep working on it and keep pursuing the things that you feel like God's gifted you to do.
So how did you end up at Miami of Ohio? Like what were your offers out of high school? And do you think that maybe not playing quarterback until your senior year? Maybe Miami of Ohio is your dream school, but was there other schools that you thought you wanted maybe go to out of high school?
Well, you know, I grew up, because my dad was, you know, in Ohio, I grew up in Ohio, obviously, and it's, you know, your Ohio State through and through in that state. But my dad, you know, same sort of thing, like growing up, we didn't like die hard watch anybody. You know, it was like people asking who my favorite professional football team was. Like, was it the Bengals, the Browns? No, it was the 49ers. I was a Joe Montana guy.
Yeah.
Like, kind of, you know, like my dad never pushed any team on me. And so I didn't really have like to think about going to college. I didn't think about that. And so, like I said, now, and you know how it is, especially nowadays, they're recruiting kids as eighth graders.
Yeah.
I mean, in Scotland, it's ridiculous. So when you don't play till your senior year, you're way, way, and that's even back in 2000, 99, 2000, that's still early. But I had zero offers, obviously, going into my first game of my senior year. My first game, I think I threw like 6 touchdown passes, the first game. And so right away, Miami called and was interested. And then I had a couple small Division II schools call. In the second game, I threw like 5 touchdowns. And so then all of a sudden, like, there are a couple more coming in. But Miami was the first school to offer me a scholarship. And the coach was unbelievable. He believed in me from the get-go. You know, he was always like, no, this guy's the guy we need. And so literally every game I threw, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 touchdowns, whatever it was. And by the end of my senior year, I had offers from pretty much everybody in the country. And so people are always like, why didn't you go to Ohio State? Why didn't you go to Ohio State? And I tell them, this is my Ohio State story, especially people from Ohio, is at that time, John Cooper was the coach. Mm-hmm. And I went down, and Ohio State was only an hour and a half from my hometown. Mm-hmm. Went down, took a visit with my high school coach. And I sat in Coach Cooper's office, and I was the greatest thing since sliced bread. Ben, we can't wait to have you, all this, you know, thinking that the Ohio State would sell. And I was like, wow, this is pretty cool. This guy like wants me to come. And, a week later, I started taking my visits, right? And then a week later, I was going to the University of Duke to visit. And I went through the airport, the Columbus airport, to fly, and I saw Coach Cooper. Remember, this is 1 week later. And I was like, sorry, is that my phone making noises? On my computer. I said, hey, Coach Cooper, how you doing? And he didn't know who I was. And I was like, okay, maybe he just doesn't like. So I said, hey, I'm Ben Roth. And he just had no idea who I was. And so I was supposed to go to Ohio State the next weekend. I canceled it and said, I'm done with it.
What about Georgia Tech? Dad never got you in on Georgia Tech?
Oh, he wanted me to go there for sure. But I think at the time, I think they were still running the triple out, you know, doing something.
that wasn't your game?
That's not my game, Dad. Sorry. But, I ended up canceling Ohio State visit, and I went to Miami. And I'll never forget this. My dad told me, He said, whatever you do, do not commit while you're here. Like, let's go home and talk about it. You know, no matter how much you love it. And I went there, and the last days, because I played basketball, my recruiting visits would always be like Sunday, Monday, right? So it was never a fun time to go. Right. And so I went there, and I'll never forget, I sat in Coach Terry Heppner's office the last day, and I said, Coach, I'm coming. And I could just feel my dad probably like, no. But you know what? It just felt right. You know, they were the first ones to offer me a scholarship. They had a senior quarterback, so I knew I'd have a chance to compete, you know, like sit for a year and then compete. And they're obviously a great education in Miami. It was only 2 hours from my hometown, so it was kind of close but far enough. But truth of the matter is the head coach got me. Terry Heppner was an amazing man. He's passed away, you know, he since has passed away. He was like a second father to me. I love that man to death.
Yeah, that's crazy. So from your freshman year, you did sit out or you played right away?
No, I redshirted.
Okay.
But I redshirted, and then I played after that.
Your redshirt freshman year, you had a huge year, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, did pretty well. We won some big games and that kind of stuff. But, you know, and then every year just got a little bit better. The pros still were never like, I think it's weird for me. I don't know how you were, but like growing up, I don't remember. People ask me all the time, did you always want to play in the pros? And I'm like, no, I wasn't. Like growing up, it's not what my dad, like, it's not what I live for. Mm-hmm. I assumed I was going to get like be a teacher. Like I went to school for education. I thought I was going to be a teacher, a coach, and just have a quote unquote normal life, if you will.
Yeah.
I never had dreams and aspirations. I mean, yeah, I was in the front yard, like being Joe Montana, Jerry Rice, like doing those things, but I never thought it was real.
Yeah.
And so I didn't have those dreams as a kid. So even like in college, I got college paid for. Like, you know, my parents didn't, we grew up with no money. So my parents didn't have to pay for college. That was the goal, was just to get to college so my parents didn't have to pay. And so then once you get like a couple years into college, things are looking good. Then all of a sudden agents start calling. And I'm like, well, it still didn't make sense to me. Like, okay, I appreciate y'all, but I didn't understand why. And then one agent who is still my agent today, he contacted me he's only a couple years older than me. So we struck up a really close friendship and we just would have conversations and he would tell me like, no, you have like a legit chance. And he said, going into what ended up being my junior year, which ended up being my last year of school. He said, what needs to happen? If this is real, what needs to happen this year for me to have a chance? He said, well, he goes, the biggest thing I would tell you is you need to, you know, win football games, but you need to have a 2-to-1 touchdown interception ratio. Like that should be kind of your goal. And the first game was at Iowa and I threw 4 interceptions and 1 touchdown.
That's the ratio.
I'll never forget after the game, he was there and I said, well, it looks like I'm staying for another year.
That's my ratio.
Yeah. But you know, the rest of the, you know, we ended up playing really well the rest of the time.
Where is Jesus in sort of the last, we've covered high school to college. Where is Jesus in sort of these years? You know what I'm saying? Like, where is your faith and kind of what does that look like?
Yeah, for sure. No, I think, in high school, obviously it's front and center, right? Cause your parents, you have no choice. In the matter, like if I wanted to go, you know, if you wanted to go to like a homecoming dance, that's fine. Saturday night, you better be up Sunday morning for church. You know, like it was. So I think when you're in high school and your parents are there and you're kind of you're forced, in lack of a better word, you it's right there, it's in front of you. You have no choice. I think when you go to college, you have a choice, right? You either stay on that path or you can just do, because now you're in control of yourself. You don't have to go. Yeah. And so it's really, you know, it's up to you to make that decision. And I don't think I didn't necessarily go away from my faith. I always believed and stuff like that. I didn't lose my faith in him, but I didn't grow. I didn't grow as a Christian in college. And I wish more than anything I would have. I wish I would have been on the path of growth and trying to get closer to him all through college, because I can only imagine where I'd be now if I would have done that, you know. But you kind of, you know, and that's the hard part. And I would encourage any high school people out there or college people, like, make a conscious effort, because it's hard, because when we grow up, right, our parents take us to church, like it's their church. So it's our church family. When you go to college, you have to actively go find a church family. And that's not easy to do. And so that's what I would just encourage people, like make that effort, go physically try and find a church and or you know, I don't remember either in college, and we might have had it, but I don't remember there being like a group of guys on the team that did like something, you know, like try and find something like that. Now I know there's like Christian athletes still going.
FCA, there's still FCA and some other stuff. Yeah.
Well, I would just encourage athletes to or not even athletes, just anybody. When you go to college, do it. Be active in it. Find it, because those college years can be tough. We all know, and it can pull you so far away from your faith. I was lucky that I didn't get pulled away from it, but I just didn't grow. I kind of stayed like here, you know? And so, and then same thing when you get to, you know, when you get to the pros or when you leave college, unless you go back home to your hometown where you have a church family, you know, I had to come to Pittsburgh and I didn't know anybody here. I didn't know churches. I didn't know youth people. I knew nothing like that. So same sort of thing. So I went through a phase of my life where I wasn't growing. And my college coach always said, you either improve or you deteriorate, you never stay the same. So I would have to say, if I wasn't improving, I was going down, you know, and I wasn't growing in my faith. And so those are the few things that I regret, and I wish I would have done better in college. And then my parents ended up moving to Pittsburgh, and, you know, you start looking for church stuff. And now we're blessed. We've got an amazing church family. And that's why I say, so the last, you know, 10 years or so have been great, because we found a church family. We've got good, you know, small group at our, you know, we do and things like that. But there was that period of like 3 years, 4 years in college, and then like 3 or 4 years, my first couple of years in the pros, where I wasn't growing as a Christian. And I wish I would have, because I can only imagine where my walk would be now. But I do remember, and you have to remember these things, that it's his plan and his, you know, he knew what he was doing. And I was trying, you know, but I just encourage people to do everything you can to, especially in college, try and find a church family if you can. That's or go home every weekend, I guess.
Yeah, that's really good advice. I really love that. So talk about your pro career a little bit. With Matt, I think baseball and football are similar in the fact that you do become family with your teammates, and some of your family members are better than others, for sure. So as far as the locker room goes, is there anybody early in your career that impacted your walk with the Lord? Matt has a couple guys in early in his career that have definitely shaped and molded his faith. And so is there anybody like that for you?
You know, I think, and I don't, and maybe it's just because I was so I had a lot of success early, you know, won a Super Bowl. I came in my first year, and the second game of the year I had to play because the quarterback got hurt. And then we won every single game. And so all of a sudden, and then in Pittsburgh, when football is like everything, it's like, wow, all of a sudden I'm the man. And then you win a Super Bowl your second year, and then you win one a couple years. I mean, it's like, holy cow, it's crazy success really early. I don't remember it being as cool to be a Christian as it is today.
Right.
Maybe it was, and I just wasn't, my eyes weren't open to it. I had tunnel vision.
Right.
But now, like, we have, you know, we do Bible studies on Friday mornings, and there might be 20 some guys in there.
Yeah.
You know, chapel the night before the game, there's so many people. And so it's kind of like, it feels cool to be a Christian now, I think. You know, and it, like, and that's what I, you know, I just did a testimony for Man Up. I told people I want to be a better Christian than I am football player. Like, I don't think there has to be one or the other. Like, I don't think you have to be either a really good athlete or a really good Christian. Like, you can be both. And I encourage high school kids, because I know in high school, like, that definitely wasn't the coolest thing to do, is be a Christian.
Well, there's that stigma too of that Christians are soft too. Yeah. And I tell people all the time, like, some of the toughest, like, not meanest, but like kind of meanest, like, get after you competitors that I played with were Christians. Like, and I think the Lord calls us to be competitive and do everything with excellence. So I don't know if there's a similar stigma, maybe a little bit in football too, I'm sure.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's not, but I'm glad. I think it's changing. I definitely think it was that way earlier. I think it's changing, because I've played against guys that will bury you in the ground and almost step on you to get up and then help you up. Or after the game, you know, be like, hey, God bless you, man. I'm praying for you. I'm like, please.
Yeah.
Did you just like
destroy my
face? Yeah. So, but those are cool things. Like, I love, like, I went to the PAO this year for the first time. My wife and I actually went, and it was so cool to see all the people there that I'm like, I had no idea. I had no idea, you know, and it's fun to be a part of that community. It's fun to see that, because you're right. I mean, we need to mentor the younger generation to do the same thing, to show them it's cool. Yeah. And so I don't, you know, you asked me the question about who mentored me in my faith in football. I don't know that I had one early. And yeah. that's, and I wish I maybe, like I said, that could be my fault because I could have not allowed it, but I don't remember the team doing a Bible study, the chapel before. But now we have got great guys on this team and great teammates and guys that just love, I mean, we've got guys on our team that just love the Lord, and it's so much fun to watch.
Do you ever feel like as the quarterback and you know, I mean, you're the leader of the team and you're the face of the franchise. Is there a burden for you to make sure that you're getting to know, I mean, it's a big roster, you know, 50, 60 guys. Like, is there a burden sometimes for you to make sure that you're interacting and getting to know and really, I guess, making sure that the relationships with that many guys, you know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like with 25 guys and, you know, pitchers are kind of off on doing their own deal. Like, sometimes I feel like there was guys I didn't really know, and I felt a little bit of guilt about that.
You know, that's been one of the criticisms that I've faced over the years, is that I haven't been the best teammate because I haven't gotten to know everybody and I haven't gotten to be close with everybody. You know, I take the mindset a lot of times and the approach. I think the more people know me and know me longer, understand that I just want to win. I'm not here to make friends all the time. And I know it's hard. I think as I've gotten older, I've tried to walk a finer line. I try to walk that line of trying to be a more approachable person. Mm-hmm. But, you know, early in my career, especially, it was like, if you're not like, you know, maybe a young guy or something, right? A guy that's a practice squad guy or someone that is a rookie. Like, if you're not helping me win right now, I don't have time for you. And I'm not saying it's right. I'm just telling you, that's just the pro. Like, I'm trying to win. And I don't have time to sit here and ask you who right. you're, you know, what your pet's name is and stuff like that. Like, if I use it, I joke, but I always say, like, if you're looking for a friend, go to the Boys and Girls Club. Like, go to the YMCA. Like, I'm here trying to win a championship.
Right.
I'm not saying that's right by any means. I'm just saying that's the approach I had. And I've tried over the last handful of years, 4 or 5 years, to really take an approach of trying to get to know guys a little better. I think it hurt me early on because every time I felt like I would get close to someone, they would get traded, they'd get released, you know, whatever it was. And it's like, why am I wasting so much time getting close to someone and then they're gone? And yeah, you talk – when guys get traded, like, you still talk to them a little bit, but it's not the same. It's way different. So I think that hurt me early on with that approach. But, you know, like you say, yeah, I it's hard to know guys. It's hard to know everybody because, you know, offense and defense and, you know, kickers and specialists and all the things that go on. And you've got, you know, 53 guys on the roster, plus then you've got 6 or 7 practice squad guys, and it can change so much. And so I haven't been good at it, but the last 4 or 5 years, I've really tried to spend time to let guys, like I tell guys all the time, like, why do you think I'm not approachable? Have you tried? And I've said no. And they're like, well, you just have this look on your face. I'm like, that's
my face.
My face, what's wrong with it? But
it's the only face they got.
Yeah. So it is, it's something I've tried to work on to be closer to guys, because I think it's important to still, especially now trying to be a mentor and a leader, especially in my faith. Like, I want them to be able to come approach me if they have questions about, you know, fatherhood, you know, being an older guy on the team and stuff like that. Like, guys are starting to do that, and I do enjoy that. I like to take the time because it gives me an opportunity to add my 2 cents on being a good husband and father, but also on trying to be a good Christian.
So let's talk about your wife a little bit and your marriage, and you guys have been married quite a while now, but what kind of marriage advice would you give a young athlete? Because it's not that it's different when we're married to athletes, but logistically it can be challenging. And there are different challenges that come with being married to well-known men. And so what kind of things have you guys done well, and what kind of things do you wish you would have done a little bit differently, looking back on stuff?
Yeah, I think, you know, you're asking me, you know, that we've been married for a while now and I've been playing for a lot longer now. It's easier for me to say, and I try and tell this to guys, especially married guys, but it's, like I said, it's easy for me now, older, and I've been established. Like, I try and tell them, your wife should, and your family should be a priority over your sport. And that's really hard for young guys to understand. I get that. And it's much easier for me to say, but it, like, I've said many times that, like, my faith comes first, then my family, then football. And that's the way it should be. It's not easy to do, but that's what it should be. And my wife understands that. And I try to put her first. I try to, you know, I think the other thing I try to, when I come in the door at home, I try to like leave it behind, right? I think that's good and bad, because what happened early in our marriage was she'd be like, how's your day? Fine. It was good. And then it's like, you know, and you move on. Right. But then it's like, you're not communicating. Mm-hmm. And a part of me would be, and she'd be like, why don't you ever tell me what's going on? I'm like, do you really want to know like that in practice that a cover two safety came down and bit on this, you know, and like, and so like, but I understand now, like, when I come home, I'll be like, okay, this is what, like, maybe not just like those little details, but you know, so I talked to so-and-so today, like things like that. And you know, the same thing where she's a cardiac PA. So she's doing heart surgeries. And when she would come home from work, she'd be telling me like all these different like veins and all this stuff she did. And I'm like, in one ear, not the other, like, you know, but I get that that's the communication part. You have to have that. So I would just like, it's a line to walk between leaving it at the door and communicating, you know, like that's your best friend. Your wife is your partner, your best friend. Like, you should be able to come home and be like, man, I had an issue with this teammate today, or so and this happened and this happened, and they should be able to support. And as a wife, I mean, she's on a call right now. I told her she's coming here, but like the support just has to, like, it has to be there no matter, because you guys will never understand what we go through, and on vice versa, we'll never understand what y'all go through, because I couldn't imagine being the wife of Ben Roethlisberger. It's not easy. I mean, when people criticize me, I can let it go in one ear out the other. It goes in her and it just sits there and it boils, and she gets so angry. And I keep telling her, like, it's okay. Like, I'm fine. It's okay. You know, if someone says Ben was terrible today, she's ready to blow up, you know? So it's just, to me, and it's communication. And whether that's teammate to teammate, you know, we had a lot of issues a few years ago in the off season, and it really just stemmed from lack of communication. Yeah. If people would talk and communicate more, I think that's a worldly issue. If we all communicated more in just life, I think we all would, there'd be a lot less issues.
No doubt about it. And so you guys have 3 young kids.
Yes.
How's that going?
It's good. They're actually, it's like so calm, because they're at church camp this morning. It's so good. Camp for like 3 hours every morning. And we're just like, this is heavenly. This is so nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Our oldest boy is 7. And then our girl is 6. And then our youngest boy is 4.
Oh, so you guys have them back to back to back.
Yeah, we tried. I wasn't getting any younger, so we tried to.
Yeah, knock the babies out.
Yes, they're awesome. They're so much fun. I told you, my son actually like loves baseball now, but might need some help. He's actually playing, his team's the A's, so we might need some help.
So how has your faith impacted your parenting?
You know, that's might be the toughest. I mean, we try to read books. We try to talk to people, you know, because you want to raise, we are going to raise, you know, you raise them to love Jesus. And I think they do. There's no doubt. Like I think it's more about us, right? Like not getting frustrated, not getting angry, swallowing your volcano. We tell our kids, swallow your volcano. Like we have to do the same thing. Our oldest is like kind of emotional at times. So if you just say something to him, oh, you think I'm the worst ever? Like, what? Like, right. No, I didn't say it. You know, like, so I think parenting is like sometimes less about trying to make the kids as much as it is about like us. The other day she comes out, I was out in the garage doing something, and she comes out like, God, this is unbelievable. I'm so angry. And I'm like, what happened? You know? And it just, once again, you have to communicate with each other, because it takes a lot of patience to raise kids. And I would encourage people to use your resources, whether it's other friends that have kids, books. I mean, everyone's got their opinion, right, on everything in life, but people that have walked through and have experienced it can help you. I've got a teenager that just had a baby, and he's like, he'll be texting me, Ben, I don't know what to do. He won't stop crying. I'm like, that's just gonna happen, bud. Yeah, it won't tell me. You know, I can't tell you what's going on. I said, my son's 7. He sometimes won't tell me what's going on either. So it's just, you know, it's just use your resources, use your friends, use people you know, because it can be very trying, you know. But at the end of the day, it's like you could be. I'm sure you guys the same way. I don't know how old you're. I know you guys. We have 3 kids too.
4.
Yeah.
4. 16, 13, 10, and 7. Almost 7.
Okay. Yeah. So you guys. Yeah. Like my son today was. He's 7. He's caring about like what he looks like already. And we're like, are you serious? Like. Like yeah. You had to have the cool mask on, you know, to go to church camp. And And so I just, you know, just communicate together and work, because they can be so frustrating and then literally come give you a smile and a hug and you're like, oh wait, I forgot what I was mad about, you know? So it's fun, but you just have to read the book, read the good book.
I think the one thing that I've appreciated about being a mom more than anything is, it's like, I'm really starting to understand the love that God has for us and how patient God is with us and how gracious God is with us, and that his love really does, it's unfailing. And because my kids can be complete jerks, like, you know, the worst, and then they say they're sorry and I'm like, yeah, we're good, no worries. And so, you know, because it's just kind of incredible to me, like, the gift that parenting can be, to where, I mean, and we don't do it perfectly at all, and in fact, I mean, our kids, we don't do it good at all sometimes. But I think the cool thing is what I've learned from the Lord is how much he loves me, and I've been able to see that through being right. You know,
yeah, patience and grace. I mean, yeah. I did a chapel with the team that last year, and I said, if you want to know how much God loves you as a person, like, if any of you have kids, I said, raise your hand. I said, if you have one kid, would you let your kid die for any? I said, I wouldn't let my son die for any of you in here. I love you all to death, but I wouldn't let my son die for any of you guys, or anybody for that matter. And right. He loves us so much that he had let his son die for us. Mm-hmm. Like that love just, it doesn't make sense, but I'm so thankful for it.
No doubt about it. That's good.
Well, we want to be respectful for your time. We thank you for coming on and just appreciate it, man. Good wisdom and awesome. We appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. My pleasure. Enjoyed it.
Thank you for listening to Table 40 with Matt and Leslie Holiday, part of the Sports Spectrum Podcast Network. For more stories on sports intersecting with faith, check out sportsspectrum.com.